Now is the time that tries men's souls, an age of the dark and diary, whatever. Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, June 17th, 2026. I've got to apologize for my voice this morning. I'm fighting a cold, so just bear with me, please. We begin on the front page. Suspended Paxton Buckley loaded teacher Rob Pacey. Sixth plaintiff claims inappropriate touching. Paxton woman says her daughter, when in first grade, endured it for months during Legos class. Paxton. In a lawsuit filed last week, the mother of a former Clara Peterson Elementary School first grader claims that her daughter was inappropriately touched for months by teacher Rob Pacey during the 2024-25 school year and that its school administrators turned a blind eye once told about it. The civil complaint is the latest in a series of lawsuits alleging sexual misconduct by Pacey was filed in Ford County Circuit Court by Chicago attorney Bhavani Ravidran on Wednesday, June 10th. Against Pacey, the school district, PBL Junior High School principal Joss Didier, and former superintendents Travis Dooley and Cliff McClure. It was filed on behalf of a Paxton woman identified as Jane Doe F., the mother of the alleged victim identified as Minor F. It alleges that the child, when in first grade at Clara Peterson Elementary School during the 2024-25 school year, was repeatedly inappropriately touched by Pacey, a STEM and technology teacher at the grade school, and that no one from PBL contacted the Illinois Department of Family Services as required by law and the district's own policies. On several occasions, from 2024 until he was placed on administrative leave in the spring of 2025, Defendant Pacey rubbed Minor F's shoulders, clavicles, upper chest while teaching Legos to her class, the lawsuit claimed. Minor F experienced inappropriate and sexualized contact nearly every time Defendant Pacey taught her Legos class, the lawsuit said. The lawsuit alleges the non-consensual contact with the then 7-year-old girl, who has been diagnosed with autism and sensory sensitivity, occurred in full view of other students. On several occasions, Defendant Pacey moved his hand under Minor F's shirt and continued to reach down past her upper chest, the lawsuit said. On numerous occasions, Minor F would state, "Don't touch me." Mr. Pacey would respond that, "It's okay." Minor F repeatedly asked Defendant Pacey to stop touching her by grabbing his hand and asking him to stop. One such incident was in March 2025 when her mother was picking her up from school. The child began to cry as she sat in the car, revealing that Pacey had been touching her inappropriately on her shoulders, clavicles, and chest area for months, according to the lawsuit. Her mom immediately went back into the school to inform the administrators, who then met alone with the child, according to the lawsuit. After the meeting, no one from PBL followed up with the mother, who repeatedly reached out to the school, alerting them to the non-consensual touching, the lawsuit said. In April 2024, the mother emailed Mr. Dooley directly, informing him that her daughter indicated that Mr. Pacey makes me uncomfortable because he always rubbed her shoulders even if she grabbed his hand and asked him to stop, the lawsuit stated. After the mother repeatedly reached out to the school, she was accused of being aggressive. Eventually, the lawsuit said the mother and her child had a series of 3 meetings with school administrators who indicated it was a legal matter and that they did not call DCFS for such matters. Since then, the mother has had to pull her child from school for her safety, the lawsuit said. Her mother attended PBL High School from 2008 to 2010, according to the lawsuit, and during her senior year was told by other female students that she should stay away from Pacey because he cross the lines of inappropriate behavior. These latest allegations against Pacey are similar to other claims made in lawsuits filed earlier, but they are the first alleging inappropriate touching by Pacey at the grade school in Paxton. The other lawsuits filed by Vervindran last year on behalf of five other plaintiffs and against the same set of defendants alleged Pacey had inappropriate and grooming contact with multiple female students in at least 22 such incidents in all from 2010 to 2022, when he was teaching at PBL Junior High School and coaching both cross-country there and track at PBL High School. He was later reassigned to the grade school. Pacey, who remains on paid administrative leave, has not been criminally charged and has denied any wrongdoing, saying in a statement last summer that he is deeply troubled by the claims and without a doubt has done nothing wrong. Pacey, a lifelong Paxton resident who has worked at PBL since 2008, also continues to serve as an elected Ward 3 alderman on the City Council. This latest lawsuit includes seven counts alleging willful and wanton conduct by all the defendants, battery, intentional infliction of emotional distress, and violation of the Illinois Gender Violence Act by Pacey and supplementary respondat superior liability claims against the school district. Ravindran filed a motion to have the new lawsuit consolidated with the others she filed last year on behalf of Jane Doe's A, B, C, D, and E. Those other lawsuits were consolidated last fall into one single complaint and then amended this spring after the court dismissed with prejudice all respondeat superior claims of vicarious liability that were based on allegations of sexual misconduct by Pacey to include one additional count of willful and wanton conduct against Pacey. On June 1st, Chicago attorney Emily Schnitt, representing Pacey, and Itzhaka attorney Michael Bersani, representing the other four defendants, each filed motions seeking the dismissal of the additional count. Plaintiffs were permitted to amend their complaints only to the extent they could allege respondeat superior claims based on non-sexual misconduct, Bersani noted in a filing attached to his motion, but plaintiffs did not do so. In fact, nowhere in their amended complaints do they allege any claims based on non-sexual misconduct, while ostensibly removing all dismissed respondeat superior claims based on Pacey's conduct. Plaintiffs added a new claim, incorporated all of Pacey's acts of sexual misconduct, and repackaging them into a claim for willful and wanton conduct against the district. During a status hearing on Monday, June 15th, McLean County Judge Rebecca Foley, who has been assigned the cases, set deadlines of Monday, July 13th for the issuance of written discovery, Monday, August 3rd for the plaintiffs to reply to the defendant's motions, and Monday, August 17th for the defendants to respond. Another hearing was set for 1:30 p.m. Tuesday, September 1st. Foley said she would consider the motion to consolidate the new case with the others once it is assigned to her. Defendants indicated they would file another partial motion to dismiss, similar to the ones already pending in the new case, by Monday, June 29th. Back on the first page, we have about solar farms. 25-acre solar farm near Paxton, Ive. City Council expected to hear from developer in July. Paxton. A solar farm is planned for 25 acres of farmland just outside of Paxton, Mayor Bill Ingold revealed during the City Council's monthly meeting on Tuesday, June 9th. About a week or so ago, the city attorney, Tony Schering, and I were on a Zoom phone call with somebody inquiring about the possibility of locating a 25-acre solar farm near Paxton, Ingold told Alderman. It would be near some property that was contiguous to city limits, and they asked about a possible annexation of that land into city limits, and what we said in response that we would want to kind of bring it to the council first to see what you thought. Well, two of the six aldermen present for the meeting said they were against any solar farm being built on farmland. The council agreed to hear the developer's pitch anyway. Ingle said he would contact the developer the next morning to arrange for them to attend the council's July 14th meeting to provide further details and answer any question. In response to a question from Alderman Rob Pacey, Schuring said the council could expect the project's permitting to move quickly if that would be the council's desire. If they come to the meeting in July and you are interested in moving forward with the project, it would be up for a vote for your consideration in August, Schuring told the alderman. In addition to the council's approval of the annexation, the city's zoning code seems to indicate that the project would require approval of a single-use permit, plus the agriculturally zoned land's rezoning to a permitted use district following a public hearing before the city's Planning and Zoning Commission. While details of the project were publicly disclosed by the mayor, while few details of the project were publicly disclosed by the mayor or city attorney, including the developer's name and the project's proposed location near Paxton, Ingold did reveal that the solar farm would not include any battery storage facilities and would not be located in the city's tax increment financing district because it's not in there right now. Schuring said in response to a question from Alderman Kristen Larson that he was unsure if the project's electricity generating capacity. Ingold said he was told the electricity would feed into the grid for use locally by residents and businesses here in Paxton. Also in a reply to a question from Larson, Schuring was unable to say whether the developer already owns the involved property or instead plans to either buy or lease it. I think that would be a good question for them, Schuring replied. Based on the conversation that we had with them, I don't know that we could really have inquired on that, frankly. The discussion was more about let's check with the council and see if they're interested in having the discussion. If you are, then we can get them here and let them speak for themselves. Right now, we're just taking your temperature to see what you think, Ingold told the alderman. If this is something you would like to hear more about, we'll invite them to come to the July meeting. Alderman Justin Withers and Dean Gyken both said they were not in favor of solar farms being built on farmland, but said they would be willing to hear out the developer anyway. I would suggest that we at least hear what they have to say before we make a decision on anything, Alderman Mike Wilson said. I'm okay with that, Gyken replied. We have an obligation, I think, to at least have more information than we have right now. Ingold noted that even if the annexation is not pursued and the project remains outside of city limits, the city could still have a say in whether it is allowed, as the city has zoning authority within a 1.5 mile radius of the corporate boundaries. We do zone out 1.5 miles, so we do kind of control what's going on, Ingold said. If we told them no and they don't annex the land into the city, they could always go to the county for a special use permit. Schuring said some developers of solar farms might pursue annexation and a city-based issued permit because, among other reasons, there's a little bit more regulatory certainty if they go through our process as opposed to keeping it in the county. Also, frankly, I think we can do it faster, Schuring said. I think we can go through the regulatory hearings and the process and all of that more expeditiously than counties can. It's just the process that they have to go through at the county level looks different and as a result takes longer. Also present for the meeting was Alderman Joe Reinhart. Absent were Alderman Eric Evans and Matt Greenberg. The council's July 4th meeting begins at July 14th meeting begins at 7 p.m. at City Hall on Market Street. Going back to the front page, we have a picture and a life remembered. Arcelia Watson, she loved life. Longtime teacher had lots of loves in her 97 years, including her students, the Green Bay Packers, and some really fast cars. Cool teacher. From a Great Depression-era childhood to a world traveler, celebrated teacher grabbed life by the horns. Rankin. Arcelia Watson was raised on a rural Rankin farm where her father's family lived a hardscrabble, almost hand-to-mouth existence. Watson refused to let poverty in her early life define her existence. Her son Dennis said her attitude helped her survive and thrive in the midst of difficult times. She taught it to her children. I worked for a company for 25 years, Dennis Watson said. I had great evaluations. I was second in command at this plant. One day, Dennis Watson's superiors called him into the office and told him he was fired. They would give him no reason. I was a single dad with three kids at home, he said. He told his mother about what he felt was an injustice. She looked me square in the eye and said, I know how you're feeling, but it's the worst day of your life. His mother, however, said, you have a choice. You can either make it a bad day or a good day. Arcelia Watson gave him a book containing the stories of 25 people who had suffered similarly, potentially crushing calamities. It told of the importance of attitude in handling life's indignities. Dennis Watson took it to heart and is now better off than ever in his work. My son and I coined the phrase the Watson Rule, which is, life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you choose to react to it, he said. Arcelia Watson learned to live by what she preached. The 97-year-old Arcelia Watson, who taught school for 54 years, most of those years in Paxton, winning the Golden Apple Award later in her career while teaching language arts at Paxton Buckley Lota Junior High School, passed away Friday, June 5th. She learned to work hard, study hard, and take advantage of the opportunities to expand her world. From a Great Depression-era childhood to a world traveler, the celebrated teacher grabbed life by the horns. In her autobiography, With Love, My Memoir, Watson wrote, one has to love eighth graders to teach them. I love them. PBL School District's athletic director, Lindsay Allred, was one of those eighth graders. Later, she was a fellow teacher alongside Watson at PBL Junior High School. She loved her students, Allred said of Watson. I feel like she was always doing her best to motivate her students. Just a very cool lady. I was a young teacher at the time. It was kind of unique. All those years, I called her Mrs. Watson. She pulled me aside and said, Lindsay, you can call me Arcelia now. Allred said Watson talked about her love for the Green Bay Packers and driving Chevrolet Camaros. Watson attended her first IndyCar race in 1956. Said another one-time Watson pupil, Gary Knuckles of Paxton High School's class of 1959, I can remember her always having such a fast car. She drove crazy. She kind of adopted our class. I'm not sure why, added Knuckles, noting she would frequently attend the class's five-year reunions. Watson's daughter, Susan Allen, said her mother continued to drive until age 90. She was very frugal, Allen said. She got a stripped-down Camaro, no power seats. The kids at school thought her choice of cars was cool. She was like the cool teacher. Maybe the need for speed came from her love of attending the Indianapolis 500. It became a yearly rite. Watson and her former husband, Melvin, began attending the Indy in the mid-1950s. In later years, the heat, long day, and crush of the crowd got too much for her. So, with her son, she started attending practice days where she was able to meet many of the drivers. One of her favorites was Danica Patrick. She greeted Danica Patrick, and immediately Danica took to her, her son recalled. She was wearing Danica Patrick warrior clothing, and that didn't go unnoticed by the driver who exclaimed, you're wearing my clothing. Every woman driver, She was in their corner automatically. 1 year, Watson, in her wheelchair, was the focus of a multi-photo featured in the Indianapolis Star. In her book, Watson described her early life, working hard on a rural Rankin farm that her mother had inherited. "We were very poor," she wrote. "However, we had plenty of food. We gardened and canned. Later on, we froze our food. We attended church regularly. I grew up in the Apostolic Christian Church." She attended 2 one-room schoolhouses. In each, one teacher taught all 8 grades. This type of education helped to develop a family-like atmosphere as well as social cohesion, she wrote. After 8th grade, Watson attended Rankin High School, where she began dating her future husband when she was a junior. He left school early to enlist during World War II and earned his GED while in the service. She graduated from high school as her class's valedictorian, but was still counted on to work on the farm, and when she was 16, she began working with her family in a corn factory in a nearby town. Also, every summer she and her siblings had to cut out weeds from the family's corn and bean fields. The job had to be done by the 4th of July if we wanted to attend the holiday at the big carnival in Hoopston, Watson wrote. After originally planning to work toward a 1-year degree at Illinois State Normal University to become a teacher in a 1-room schoolhouse, she changed her focus to earn a 4-year teaching degree after speaking with her family. "I was a very shy young person," Watson wrote, "but I showed my pathfinder skills early in life. I graduated with honors on the dean's list." She student taught at Paxton High School before spending 6 years teaching at East Lynn High School. She had her first child, Dennis, while a teacher at East Lynn, and then, after a break, began teaching at Paxton High School, where she spent 3 years teaching English 3, Rural History, and Community Relations. After the birth of her daughter, Watson taught half-time for 3 years as a traveling teacher, teaching grades 6, 3, and 8. She then joined the faculty at Paxton Junior High School, where she taught reading and language arts, retiring in 2009 at age 80, after 54 years of teaching, including 48 in Paxton. Susan Brown, who also taught 8th grade at PBL Junior High, called Watson a fantastic mentor and always building everybody up and making us feel good. "She kind of took me under her wing," Brown said. Brown and Watson attended a National Education Association event in San Francisco in 1994 because Watson was a fan of Hillary Clinton, who attended with her husband, President Bill Clinton. At Watson's urging, they stood for hours outside their hotel waiting for the Clintons' arrival, which they finally did. As an educator, Watson didn't like everything she saw happening. Writing in her memoir, published in 2012, she said changes in society were putting new pressures on teachers and schools. "There are more diverse students in our classrooms, racially, culturally, linguistically," Watson wrote. "We have students with learning disabilities being placed in the regular classroom. Because of poverty, more students are coming to school at risk. Many students are in crisis because of violence, alcohol abuse, and other drug abuse. Our schools must help all students reach for high standards. We need to help our students acquire problem-solving skills in addition to instilling in them the values of responsibility, hard work, and respect." Ellen said her mother became an avid traveler in the last half of her life. Estimated she visited up to 50 countries. Her favorite landmark was the Great Wall of China. "She drove a car until she was 90 and a half," Allen said. "She still lived independently until she was 96 and a half. Then she had a health issue and went to assisted living. But after a fall that hospitalized her, became a resident of Heritage Health in Hoopston. Her mind was still pretty clear. She was full of life. People would say, 'You don't look or act your age.' Other people would say, 'You look like you're 80, even when she was in her 90s. Allen said her mother was also quite opinionated and strong-willed. She had certain female friends she could talk politics with. Alan said her mum would do anything for Dennis and I when it came to her grandchildren, including babysitting. Watson was not wanting when it came to energy. She was an usher for more than 25 years at the University of Illinois Assembly Hall, now called the State Farm Center, and would work at everything from rock concerts to basketball games there. She was also an avid Fighting Illini sports fan. When the Chicago Bears were doing work for their stadium, and they were down here in Champaign, she signed up to be an usher over there, not because she liked the Bears, but because she was a Packers fan, Alan said, and wanted to be there when Green Bay came to town. Dennis Watson said she became a Packers fan because fans in downstate Illinois generally followed Green Bay or Chicago, and she thought Bart Starr was a better role model than Dick Butkus. She loved doing things, Alan said, and she loved life. We'll now turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, June 17. David L. Duringer, Scottsdale, Arizona. David Lee Duringer, 85, of Scottsdale, Arizona, formerly of Gibson City, died Wednesday, June 3rd, following a brief illness. A memorial service will be at 2 p.m. Wednesday, July 15th, at Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. Carol Jane Geyer, and that's spelled G-E-Y-E-R, Northport, Florida. Carol Jane Geyer, née Smith, 93, of Northport, Florida, formerly of Buckley, Champaign, and Savoy, died Monday, June 1st at Solaris Healthcare in Port Charlotte, Florida. A memorial service will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, June 20th at St. John Lutheran Church in Champaign, followed by interment of ashes at Grandview Memorial Garden in Champaign at noon. A luncheon will be served at the St. John Lutheran Church's Parish Hall following the cemetery service. Catherine Messick, Kokomo, Indiana. Catherine K. Messick, 96, of Kokomo, Indiana, formerly of Gibson City, died Wednesday, April 22, 2026. A visitation and funeral service were Monday, April 27, at the Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Kokomo, Indiana, followed by a burial in Kokomo Memorial Park. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be made to Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Kokomo, Indiana, where Mrs. Messick and her husband served as active members from the day the doors first opened. Floyd Bud Otto Roberts. With profound sadness, we announce the passing of Floyd Michael Bud Otto Jr., a beloved patriarch, dedicated farmer, and pillar of the Roberts community. Bud departed peacefully on Tuesday, June 9th at the Gibson Area Hospital Annex in Gibson City, following a courageous and extended stay. Funeral services were held Monday, June 15th at the Living Word Church in Roberts. Following the service, burial was held at the Lyman Township Cemetery, again in Roberts. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Living Word Church in Roberts or the Gibson Area Hospital Annex. James M. Reuter, R-E-U-T-T-E-R, Quincy. James N. Reuter, 88, of Quincy, formerly of Watseka and Milford, died at 8:04 p.m. Wednesday, June 10th. Per his wishes, cremation rites were accorded, and a celebration of life will be held at a later time in Watseka. Memorials may be made to Blessing Hospice in Quincy, Illinois. Gary Reynolds, Gifford. Gary Reynolds, 75, of Gifford, formerly of Paxton, died Friday, June 12th. Private celebration of his life will be held. Beverly Sue Zebarth, Melvin. Beverly Sue Zebarth, 72, of Melvin, died at 5:45 a.m. Friday, June 12th, at Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis, surrounded by her family. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m., Sunday, June 28th, at St. Peter Free Lutheran Church in Melvin, A celebration of life will follow at 6 p.m., and a private burial will be at a later date. Memorial contributions may be made to St. Peter Free Lutheran Church or the Roberts Melvin Fire Protection District.